Hello, everybody. This is Clint Locklear with Rant of a Free Trapper. As you'll notice, this is on the weekend and not during the week. And I want to explain why, and I want everybody to be on the same page. And I was afraid of the rant that I actually recorded Wednesday. The more I thought about it, that it would cause massive confusion. And when there's massive confusion, there's massive frustration. And then people can get upset. So we don't want upset people with Trapping Radio over something silly. So I decided to scrap, which I thought was actually a very good rant, which we will do that one again, and start over. So this is actually Friday morning. We're going to have, as you'll know tonight, which is Friday, which you won't hear this till the Saturday or Sunday or whenever you listen to it, we've got Tom Miranda on. And one of the things that I've been wanting to do, and I've been trying to figure this out with the simplest system that I could come up with. For Trapping Radio, maybe once or twice a month, maybe more than once a week. It depends on the response that I get from this. I'll let that kind of guide. I want to have a call-in show where I can talk to you and see if there's any way that I can help you out with a question you have, or you're struggling with your trapping, or I want to keep it somewhat limited so it's just not all about business, different things like that. But I'm trying to figure out how to do this the most simplest way where it flows smoothly and everybody kind of knows the rules so there's no frustration. And my original plan, guys, was by using Facebook, but since Facebook now only lets you see 10% of your people, and most of all my Facebook is actually under public, you know, like a person, so I'm limited on how many people that I have. So if a lot of people like the call-in show, there's a limit of 5,000 friends that I can have, and I can't go over that. And then you start trying to click over to something else, it just gets all squirrely and messed up. And plus, they only let you see about 10% of the people that they're picking what you choose to watch now instead of you choosing the way Facebook originally was. So that was an issue. And I thought that I could be on Facebook and then just be able to type inside of a post, you know, next caller or finishing up on the call or whatever. And then the next trapper that wanted to call could see that and call in, and we'll have it where you can hear me and the audience can hear you, and we can go about that way. But by the way Facebook works, I'm afraid there's going to be a lot of down space. If I start a different subject, then I get a phone call, I have to stop in the middle, and it just didn't seem like that was the best way, but it was the simplest way that I come up with. Well, there's a podcast that I listen to very periodically. And I'm going to pull this up so I can tell you exactly who it is. It's Tim Ferriss. I don't listen to him all that often. It's kind of more of the four-hour work week kind of mentality. And after a while, that stuff just gets boring to me personally. But I do listen to him every now and then. And he does this thing, which I've never heard of before, which I thought was pretty fun, is he just had a show that... It's kind of like for his, and he's got a big show. I mean, he probably is doing 250,000-300,000 downloads a show. And there's no way to do a call-in really with that without mass confusion. So what he's doing is basically it's like called Tequila Night, and you kind of give him permission to call you, and he kind of knows what the subject is. And then y'all have a discussion online that, you know, it's there permanently. And he won't call anybody till, I guess, he drinks four glasses of tequila, which is it's weird because that doesn't come across as his personality. But he's really loosened up. He's very open and honest, and the audience loved it. And I have to admit, it was entertaining. And it was really cool. So I listened to that show after I did the rant from Wednesday that I was going to post last night. And then this way makes more sense. So what we're going to do for the call-in show, and we may even do this on the rant sometimes, we'll just have to pick times when this will work, is like if I'm on the road and I'm in a motel room at night, you know, this could be a way to really have some cool shows because I'm not really doing on that since I got an RV, being the RV. So if I could be in a Walmart parking lot, post something to YouTube and Facebook, and or I can contact the people that have given me permission. We could probably do sometimes two or three shows a week, or we could spread those out or whatever. Just we can just see how it goes. So we're just kind of walking down this path together a little bit. So what I'm going to do is Tuesdays between 5:30 and 6:30, because as everybody knows, I turn my phone off at 5, and because I'd like to be able to talk to my wife sometime. She goes to yoga. And since she goes to yoga, I've got that hour, hour and a half there where we can do a call-in show, and I'm not stepping on family time per se. So what I want to do, my email, guys, is really simple. It's clint@wolfernation.com. It's all over internet. It's not hard to find. If you want to talk to me on or a subject about trapping, instead of me like almost lecturing or explaining or telling stories, but you want to have a dialogue back to back on a particular subject so we can zero down if I can help you on a particular thing, we can do that. So if you're interested in talking to me, and it's going to be recorded and it's going to be on Trapping Radio, email me at clint@wolfernation.com. In the subject line, this is important because of spam. Because of all the emails that I get, I need to know what these are so I can put them in a separate folder and somewhat have this organized. At the very top, just say call in or Trapping Radio, call in for Trapping Radio. And then inside the email, let me know that what the subject is about. Because the more interesting it is, I'll be honest, the more apt I'm going to be willing to take it on. If I've got more than I can do in one show, make that very precise. I'm not looking for a big old long story from you guys. I'm not going to read it. I just don't have time for that. So just, you know, in one or two lines, what it is you want and your phone number. And we're making a pact here. If you send this in, you're basically saying, unless there's an emergency come up, on Tuesday between 5:30 and 6 Central Time, not Eastern Time, not Western Time, not Mountain Time, Eastern or Central Time, that you'll be available to be on a phone that sounds good with it when you're in service. So if you send an email in and I get, say, 10 guys that want to have these questions for next Tuesday, then I can call them, and when we're finishing up the call, I'll just dial the next one and we'll just keep a rolling. The way I was going to do it, I think it was going to be too clunky for it to work. And I talked to some guys at the NTA about this and they were pretty fired up. And it's just a better way for us to communicate on certain topics where it's not so much just about a lesson, but it's about dialogue. And I think that'll be a pretty cool way to do this. So if you wanna ask me questions, it's clint@wolfernation. Put in the subject line, you know, call in show for Trapping Radio, call in for Trapping Radio show, whatever you want to do. But it needs to be very obvious to me of what that is. And then I can print those off, and then I can have them sitting there when I do the call-in show. So when I get done with one, I can call the other. I don't have staff to help me with this. It's still going to be a little bit clunky, but I think it'll be totally fine. I think we'll have a lot of fun. I think it'll be extremely interesting because I can ask questions and really get in-depth on certain things. So I think that'd be really cool. So I'm going to put a YouTube video up explaining how this is. I'm going to put it on Facebook, but I think the email where I call you can flow better than you trying to call me, because if there's three people trying to call, or that you don't know when the phone call is going to end and all that type stuff. So let's give that a try, and if I don't get enough response, it just won't happen. You know, that's just telling me that's not something the audience really wants, but I have a feeling it is, because I think people want to have more personal type stuff answered when they're having issues. So we're going to try that. Now, the rant is sponsored, as it always is, by Funky Trap Tags and Supply. He was up at the Nationals. He's got a big RV, and I got to go into his RV when I did Tom Miranda's interview, and it was super nice. And me and Cindy's been talking about RV for a while. So we purchased a used RUV is what it's called. It's it looks like a Class A, but it's smaller. It's not a great big thing. It's only about 4 inches wider than an SUV, but it looks like a Class A. And I used to take a camper to the shows and hooking up and unhooking and going through traffic, not interested. So we went ahead and did that. So luckily now when we do the podcast interviews at the shows, I don't have to put someone in a Chester Molester van. We can actually sit in a nice chair and be a little bit more comfortable with air conditioner running. So that's going to be really cool. So it's going to be like the mobile interview station when we go to these shows and different things like that. So that's really cool. But I do blame Alan for this because I called up talking about the reasons and he was making RVing sound so good and me and Cindy used to do it and really enjoyed it. So if this doesn't work out, then I personally hold him responsible. I don't hold Jody responsible because his wife is perfect and she could do no wrong. So I'm just going to blame it on Alan if it doesn't work out. But he is the sponsor. Great guy. You need trap tags, go see him. You need supplies, go see him. You need lure, go see him. You're out of country, go see him. Because I don't ship out of country. He can do that for you. It's Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. I am going to do the rant today. And this is sort of like a rant. And this is kind of one of those things that I didn't sleep very good last night. I had to get up and about 11 o'clock because I couldn't stand it in bed no more and got up and read until I fell asleep and I went back to bed. Not that I'm worried about what's going on, but it frustrates me and my brain does not shut off because what's going on is so, it just seems so illogical to me. And as everybody knows, I'm very open with what's going on in my world. We bought a house in foreclosure. We were using it for packaging and all that type stuff. And then we put a bunch of money into it to flip it so we could pay off our farm. And that's the route we're going. Well, we got an offer. And I've never sold a house. The house that we have right now, we've had for 19, 20 years. I mean, this is the first house that we bought we live in. So I've never been on the seller side of selling a house. And I just assume it'd be like really any other type of business negotiation or anything like that. But no, it is not. And it doesn't make sense. And this is like bouncing around in my head right now. So I figured this would be an interesting thing to talk about. And there's a couple of good points to bring up that in everyday life, if you understand this, you can not stress out about stuff as much, and you can understand when you're talking to other people when they seem irrational, it kind of makes sense. So you can understand that it's just human nature, because I know people, everybody wants to think that they're logical, they're rational. You know, we're always right. Whatever the other tribe, non-tribe members are, they're always irrational and stupid and all that type stuff. People are people, and people are irrational animals, way more than they are logical beings. And it's proven, and there's some neat things about this, it's proven that your irrational animal side always looks at a problem first, and your logical side will play off the information that your irrational animal side gives you. And you can't skip that. There's no way. There was actually some cases where people had the more the animal side of their brain and a brain injury disconnected. They still had the logical part of their brain. They could not make a decision. The brain does not work that way. No matter how evolved people want to think we are, or how smart, or how educated, or you know how you know like Spockian you are, you have to have that irrational side to work on this other side. And this is becoming more apparent to me when we got an offer on the house. And then the negotiation starts. And the more I think about how this negotiation is, it's the most illogical and insane way to sell something or buy something that someone could come up with. Now, I understand kind of what it is, because the real estate market is ran by realtors. Realtors are using the same old principle of complexity, so you have to use them, so it's always becoming more complex. So their service is needed, even though it's probably really not, if it wasn't for the complexity that the realty market has put in there through the lobbyist of going to get laws passed to make it more complex. It's just like an old medieval guild, kind of like if you wanted to be a blacksmith, you had to join the guild, you had to work for 10 years for free, you had to pay 5 or 6 years of half your income after that, and if you try to be a blacksmith without going through this process, you're either killed or put in prison. Now, we don't kill people or put them in prison, but we make everything so complex that it doesn't work very well. And that's where we're at in the real estate market, especially when you're selling or buying such a large asset as a house. Now, I've read some books. I had a listener recommend a book for me, and I remember hearing about this guy when he was doing his book tour on the different podcast, and it's called Never Split the Difference. And he is a FBI terrorist hostage negotiator, and he goes through how the brain works and how the mind works and the irrational part and different ways that you can go through a negotiation so everybody's on the same page, and it's not a negotiation where you're just trying to beat somebody up. That's not what this is. And it's a very interesting book. And since that time, I've read different books he's recommended and the books that those people recommended. And I can see now why this is such a bad system. And the more, I just couldn't get this out of my head last night. So hopefully after the podcast, I can just let it go. Because I recognize, guys, I am being irrational. But that irrational part is so real inside me that my logical brain, even though I can lay it out logically, it's almost like I'm in the woods and I can see that the grizzly bear is chained up and can't hurt me. Your heart still starts beating. You're nervous that it could get away, that's going to eat you or your family and stuff like that. That animalistic part of this is so real, no matter, even if you see the chain, they tell you it's a 10,000 pound breaking strength chain and it's into a stake that's hooked to the other side of China. There's no way you can get out. If you get close enough, your animal instinct is going to kick in, because that's just what we are. We're human. Excuse me, why it's early, so I'm sucking on my Black Rifle coffee there. So, what I've learned from reading these books, because I've never really looked at negotiations the same way. I really looked at negotiation, because most people do this game. And it's a silly game, and most people think they're being very smart when they do this game. But it's like a first grade way to come to a conclusion for any type of business deal. Let's say that I'm selling something for $100 and you're trying to buy it. The way most everybody does it, it doesn't matter if it's a house, a car, or a pencil. You want $100, I'll give you $50. Well, I can't take $50. How about $80? Well, I don't know about $80. But what about 65? And what where everybody's trying to get to is the difference between 150 and 75. And somehow that is negotiating. That's not negotiating. That's a first grade way of looking at anything. Because there's a lot of information that you don't have that could really impact on what it is that you want it to do. Because perspective matters. It really does. Perspective matters. So let's say that I'm selling, and I'm gonna explain to you why we're so irrational when it comes to stuff like this, so you can kind of keep this in the back of your mind. So if you start feeling that animal fight or flight happening, you can try to spock it out a little bit with logic. And that way, because there shouldn't be hard feelings when it comes to negotiation. Because a negotiation is a situation that two people are trying to resolve. That shouldn't turn into a dang near fist fight. And ours is not on the house. That is not what's happening. But when I hear how people negotiate stuff, I mean, people get their feelings hurt. They're thinking the other thing is everything's bad. But we're irrational. And part of that irrational is is what is fair. Now, that's a word that you'll learn if you study negotiation that 90% of the time should never be used because most of the time it's an accusation. But fair, that is a trait that is in animals, even all the way down to chimpanzees. And there's been several studies to show this. If you teach a chimp to do a certain thing and you reward that chimp with a reward like a banana, and you've got two chimps that do the same thing, and apparently a banana to a chimpanzee is better than a cucumber, because that's what these studies have used. If both of them get a different reward for the same thing, the monkey that gets the cucumber, not the sweet banana, goes absolutely apoplectic and throws a hissy fit. Now, he's not really buying anything. He's just doing a simple task. But he sees the other monkey get the banana, and he did the same thing, and he didn't, and he throws a fit. So it's an animal that's in you completely about that. If you feed one dog and not the other, watch what happens. It's just part of the animal that's in us all. So this fairness idea is part of it. And your perspective changes on fairness. Perspective, guys, is huge. And the way that the real estate market does not allow for any type of interaction between buyer or seller, you can't make any of these decisions up. So you have no perspective about what's going on inside of a negotiation, because it's not really a negotiation. It's like a first grade negotiation, but with something that actually has a lot of impact on two different people. So this idea of perspective. I've got a trap, and it's worth, the market says it's worth $100, and you come up and you say, I'll give you 50, we play the stupid game till we get to 75. So we get to 75. See, that's a first grade way of looking at it, because without being able to talk to the other person and understand what's going on with them, and they understand what's going on with you, it can totally change the perspective. So, like, if you're selling these traps, and the other guy started off his anchor price really, really low, say at 30, and you felt like he was a nice guy and you wanted to help him out and this, that, and the other, so you're selling this $100 trap for 50, and then you see him go over to another trapper 10 feet away and sell it to him for 120. Your perspective on that deal just radically changed. Now, it shouldn't have, but it does. What if I've got a $100 trap and a state convention says that they're going to put it inside of a auction, and they want it for free, and then you see in a YouTube video that the guy that took it for the auction is now out using it on his trap line, and you can see your trap that he's using on his YouTube video. Now, him using the trap shouldn't really make a difference on your reasoning for giving it to him, because you thought it was for donations, even though he's being dishonest. But the perspective greatly changes on that. Or if you find out that, if the state association is going to auction that trap at market value so they get the money, and then all of a sudden when it goes through market or goes through the auction, it's $20. See, just these little bit of facts, even though you want to help them out for the donation, changes the perspective. Let's say that you make these traps for $100, and I come to you and I go, hey, Billy Bob, I'd like to buy all of the traps you can produce, but I can't give you $100 because I need a volume discount. And we work out what that volume discount, let's say we get that down, volume discount, I'll buy every one you can produce for $70. You don't have to worry about marketing, shipping, I'll come pick them up, I'll do all that. You, the trap maker, does your paperwork, and you go, well, I can still make a 30% profit on these traps, and all I have to do is make the traps, and I can go do something else. This seems like a fair deal. You both agree on the deal. you're getting the money you want as the trap maker. I'm getting the money that I want to spend on the trap buyer. And then all of a sudden, 2 months later, you find out that there's some quirky law in Europe where that trap is the only one that's legally allowed to be used in Europe. And I'm selling the traps that I'm paying for you for $75, but I'm getting $1,000 a piece. Now, we've got a year contract on this, and I'm buying thousands of them. What is your inside telling you about the fairness of that right now? See, that's irrational. Why do you care what I'm selling them for? Why would that even matter? If you're fine with what I bought them from you for, what difference does it make? But it does, doesn't it? Because if you found out that I was getting a discount on your trap, and we agreed to it, we were both happy with it when we started. After we made the deal, I found out this other deal in Europe, so I could sell them for $1,000 a piece. And let's say that you find out that I sold 1 million of these traps in Europe for $1,000 a piece. So I've got $100 million. And you look at how much you make as a trap maker, you're going to get very upset. It's not logical, it's irrational, but that's just the way that people are. Kind of get what I'm saying? The perspective is so important when you're trying to figure out a situation with somebody. Now, in the way that the real estate market works, apparently, because the complexity of the medieval guild of the realtors, and the buyer and seller are pretty much characters of the other, because, you know, to me, the buyer is just a character of a buyer. I don't know who they are. I don't know that much about them. I don't know what their situation is. I don't know any type of perspective whatsoever. They're looking at me as a home seller, and I'm the character of a home seller. So in their mind, I'm just worried about getting top dollar. In my mind, they're just trying to get the lowest dollar. But since we can't talk, there's no perspective. So emotions have a tendency in something like that that could get pretty high. You know, I don't know if they're just fishing for a better deal, or maybe they're such good people, it has value to me that they're my neighbors. And I'm willing to lose money on the house because I want solid neighbors. To me, that's got a lot of value. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they're going to have parties all night and on the weekend, and they're screaming and hollering at all the time, or they're antis and they're going to be, you know, screwing with me because they know I'm a trapper, and I don't know. There's no perspective whatsoever. And because there's no perspective, it's really easy for their irrational brain to really start screwing with it. Because are they just trying to take advantage of the seller because they think he may need money? Are they in a situation where they really can't afford past a certain point? I mean, how the hell do I know? I can't talk to them. Makes no sense whatsoever. They don't know if I've got to have a certain amount of money and I can't go below that because of other obligations with that money on my side, and I'm seeing it. So they don't have a perspective on what the price is. Now, when you sell a house, you get comps. The comps are showing the value of the house from what other ones are sold in your area that are pretty much the same. This is the amount of money. So what do you do when you negotiate something like that? Well, what I would like to do is bet we'll just say, we'll take $100,000 for this house. That's what we'll take. If you want to negotiate on that, you can, but it's going to be $100,000 because we have to have this, and that's just what it is. Because every time we go to do paperwork on this negotiation, we got to drive to the office. We're going to spend 45 minutes to an hour making sure we get everything right and all the paperwork signed. And this goes on and on. So it's eating hours out of my business. It's still don't know what's going on, really. Don't know anything about these other people. And it frustrates the living snot out of me. I mean, you may think, well, it's just money. Well, no, it's not just money, because that's a logical thing to say when it's not your money. You're very irrational when it is your money or what money you're getting coming in. Because let's say the reason I think that, that negotiations should be different in real estate, let's say that it's a young couple that wants to buy the house. And they really like the house. They're going to be awesome neighbors. You can tell that right off the bat. They're hardworking. They're somewhat close to your tribe. You know that if something came up, that you know he'd probably come over and help your wife if he is on the road, or that you would go over and if someone was trying to kick in their door, you could be over there in a few minutes to take care of that situation for them. You know, something like that. Well, let's say that I'm selling a house for $100,000 just for round numbers, and they come in at $80,000, and we play this little second grade game. And then we're stuck about, say, 90. I can't go below 90. They can't go below above 88. And we stick there. Now, without perspective, how do you come up with a decision? I don't get this. I mean, this really blows my mind. Because what if the perspective changes to the point where they've got a son or a daughter that's got some type of crazy disease, and insurance doesn't cover all of the medication, and then all of a sudden you find out that, you know, he's been working to the same job for 8 or 9 years, and whatever it is, if he gets a pay raise, it's probably going to be a dollar, you know, every 5 years or whatever. The medication is high. They've budgeted in the medication with the house payment and food and rent, and you, and then they could explain that to you. We really can't go over 118,000, or see what I say, 88,000, because we're worried we might not have enough money to either eat, or if the medication goes up another 5%, which it's been doing every year for the last 10 years, we're going to have to foreclose on the house, and we don't want to be in that situation. See, that perspective totally changes the idea of the character of the buyer and the seller. Because if you don't know anything like that, and I'm just making that up, but if you didn't know that, I might go, that makes perfectly good sense. It'd be good to have y'all for neighbors. I'm willing to eat that $2,000 because I have perspective on what that is. Or from the way that it is now, it could be a fishing expedition where they're just trying to beat somebody up on the lowest price so they can go brag to their buddies about it, which a lot of people do. You don't know. You absolutely don't know. Now, the reason I'm saying all of that, when you're talking with people, guys, and it doesn't have to be a house or buying or selling a business or anything like that, the purpose of negotiation is to gather information so you can make a educated decision on what it is from both sides' point of view. There's a lot of people that look at negotiation like it's a war or it's a game just to beat the other person. I think that's kind of silly, personally. But there's people that's like their sport. They see someone has something for sale, they just try to get it for next to nothing. And it's a sport they do. And if I was selling something, I would want to know that that's what the person's doing, because if I didn't care about the object, I wouldn't care. If I didn't really need the money, I wouldn't care. But if I had to do something with that money, then I don't want to waste my time dealing with these other people, because they're just fishing. So you just don't know. Now, the other thing about what I'm noticing from doing a house, if you never sold a house, trust me, you're going to figure this out pretty quick, which makes no sense to me, because it I just don't see how this logically works out. We're supposed to bang out a price before the home inspection. Not a general area of the price, but a price. Then we're going to have a home inspection. So the home inspector goes over. We've never lived in that house. You know, as far as I know, it is a solid. It's the same people that built our house built that house, and they built these things like tanks. You know, but when a home inspector, his job's to find something. So they're going to find stuff. Now, you don't know what that stuff is. Now, on my end, if you could, and I'm going to say some of this stuff so you can kind of understand why negotiation needs to be about information gathering, where both sides are not trying to beat each other up, where both sides are trying to fix a situation, where both sides can get what they need to get and both leave feeling decent about the experience. So we bang out a price, say $100,000. I've got to have $95,000 for whatever reason. They can't go over $95,000 for whatever reason. I wouldn't know what that reason is because they won't let us talk. And that's not real numbers or anything, by the way. So we bang out a price of $95,000. They're at their limit. I'm at my limit. Now, see, if you could negotiate with somebody face-to-face, this is how kind of the conversation could go. We can lower the price, but we just need to be very clear there's not going to be hardly any money with whatever comes up with a home inspection. Are you fine with that? And if they go, no, we're not fine with that, then we're going to have to keep our price up higher to cover whatever the home inspector has, because this is the reason that we have to have this price. And we can justify the price, just like they can justify their offering. So you can have two adults sit down and look at this and go, okay, if he finds $1,000 worth of stuff to be fixed, the seller may go, okay, we'll suck that up. If he finds $5,000 worth to fix, we can't do it. There's no more meat on those bones there whatsoever. It's not a greed thing. It's just there's no more money there. It's not going to work our situation. So if we go to the bottom price to begin with, are we clear that there's not going to be hardly any money for whatever the inspector does? And then they can make the decision of, well, unless something bad, we'll just try to fix it, or maybe we can get together and do it. You know, kind of like rational adults should be able to figure stuff out. And then we can come to the conclusion of, do we need to go to the bottom price or not? See, because of the complexity of the real estate market, apparently you can't use common sense when you actually go in and do anything for the realty market. Because let's say that 95 was pushing their absolute limit and it was pushing my absolute limit on what I could sell it for. You would think that two rational people could go, okay, I don't know what the inspector's going to say because I've never lived in that house. I'm pretty sure it's going to be maybe some, need a new gutter, or, he finds an outlet or something that doesn't have power to it or something like that. So for $300 or $400, we're not going to get too wrapped up on it. What if we set the sale price at $100,000, and then after the inspection, if there's only $1,000 and we kind of agree where that $95,000 mark is, we'll just drop the price and sell it to you for $96,000. Or we'll split the difference at $95,500. See, but you can't do that in the way this is. But that's the way negotiations should work. Another example, me and Cindy were looking at a house. And it had not the best house. It was a solid house, but not the best house. It did have some acreage with it where we could put some cows on, which I like that idea. Figure out, raise three to get one a year for me and Cindy or something like that. That was kind of in my back of my mind. But it was a beautiful, I'm talking for my lure business and mail order business, a beautiful setup. Cindy was willing to not have her dream house because a lot of our income comes from this business, that we would suck up the house a little bit, have the land, is in a great location close to the farm, but the buildings were like the juggernaut of why it was the best property for us. We ran comps on the property, $206,000. Well, we didn't know anything because we can't talk, people. We can't be adults in America and actually talk with people. It's got to go through other people that are, you're just another one of whatever they're doing for the day. We come to find out later that her husband has died and she's got a trust to live in that house until she either moves, sells it, or dies. And she's got a lot of emotional attachment to this property. I can understand that. She's older. She told us she was wanting to move back to family to another state up north. So that kind of, you know, okay. So she had a sales price of $249,000. She's irrationally, emotionally attached to this property because her and her husband built it. I totally get that. She's got a son that actually owns the house. And it took a lot of backdoor talking and figuring out to figure out all this I'm telling you. It seems like he's willing to sell the house at market value, which is around 206, 210, somewhere around in there. She wants 250. She said she's not going to take less than 249. Because of the emotional part and because she don't have to move because the house is paid for, apparently, I'm sure. And all these other reasons, so the one buyer's got a price of the market value of 206 and 210. One seller does. The other seller has a price of 250, which is, you know, $40,000 above market. I don't even know if a bank would do that. But see, if two rational people could negotiate that, let me tell you how this works when people can be... talk to each other, get a perspective, figure out what the issue is, and figure out a way to fix the issue. It's not complicated as long as two people are being honest. And you can figure out pretty quick if you start negotiating with somebody if they're a blowhard or they're just fishing or they're a dishonest person. And then you can just walk away. But let's say she really wanted to move back to her family in Michigan, but to her, it's worth $250,000 or $249,000 because of her emotional attachment. She may be having arguments with her son about it. I have no idea because we can't talk. Well, my first option was, okay, if they sell it for $250,000, the difference between, say we bought it, ended up at $210,000, and her price of, say, $250,000, well, there's a $40,000 difference there between what one buyer or one seller wants to sell it for and what the other seller is willing to take for it. Negotiating. If we could have talked to them, which we can't, apparently, it's like they skin you alive and put you under the prison if you go against the guild. We could have went between two of them, set them both down, and said, we would like the property, let's try to figure this out. We can't pay $250,000 for the property because it's only valued at $206,000. We don't have $250,000 just to put down, so we're going to have to get a loan. The bank is not going to let us do that. So I'm trying to figure out a way that we can still get the property and y'all each get what you want. Now, there's a lot of reasons this would fall apart because of the irrational part and because of the perceived fairness issue. But to fix this problem through negotiation, the split between 210 and 250 is 40. So the split that the lady that has the trust would get would 20. If the son really wanted to sell the house because he wanted that property to pay off his house or go get another house, and we were allowed to negotiate, we could simply go, what if we set up the terms of the agreement where we're going to buy it at 230, you get the split from the 206, and you get the split, you get the extra $20,000. You get what you wanted as the one that's living in the house with the trust. You get what you want because you want to sell the house and you're willing to take market value. We get what we want because we want the property. It works out for everybody. The issue is solved, unless the irrational part of, well, why does she get more money than me? Because it is proven psychologically over and over again, that's how people think. That's a lot of the reason with the socialist that's growing in this country, it's because of the fairness idea. And everybody wants to be treated fair, and most people want to treat other people fair. But how fair is it to be LeBron James, built like a Zeus god, with all that experience, and what is he, 6'9" or 7 foot tall or something like that? How fair is that for LeBron James to be built like that and talented like that? Are you a 4'9" China guy that wants to play in the NBA? It's not fair. It is fair, but it's not fair. And with all the crap that we're seeing with the socialists, it's always about fairness. No one, when they're looking at what someone makes, no one really takes into account maybe they're working harder than somebody else. Maybe they're just smarter. Maybe they've educated themselves better. Maybe they're more creative. Maybe. And you get all of this stuff in people's heads that it's not fair because they're making $50,000 a year and I'm making $30,000 a year. That's not fair. And the feet stomping starts. Well, it actually is fair. He's working more. He's smarter than you are. And then that's just the way that the world is. To take money away from him doesn't make any sense. So you've got all this fairness issue, but you can see that every day when you watch any type of news. People are always worried about fairness. But see, you can get around the fairness through negotiation because you can ask them, why is it not fair? You can ask open-ended questions. You can learn to mirror. You can learn to label emotions. If you start getting into negotiation study, you start learning all this, and the purpose is so you can fix an issue. Now, the main point of the show, I have no freaking idea, guys. I have no idea. I'm highly frustrated with just the process of not being able to get a perspective, not being able to figure out an issue, not being able to know anything about a negotiation whatsoever. And it's just on my mind. But I can see how it is, because I'll tell you how irrational people are, because I felt this last night and this morning, even though my brain logically knows this. Loss aversion is irrational. Loss aversion is why most people continue to do stuff they don't like in jobs, and they never take a chance on anything else in their life. It's because psychologically it's an irrational fear of losing something, because it is shown repeatedly. Most people would rather not lose something than ever take a chance on gaining something. That's why a lot of people want to start a business and never do. That's why guys want to go full-time trapping and never do. Because they're so focused on what they could lose that they can't see the gain from what they can gain. And that's just if you look into psychology, you'll find that over and over and over again. But I can tell you in my mind, because I know how real estate works, let's say that I have a $100,000 house. We put it on the market for $110,000, thinking that I'm going to end up around $100,000. When it gets below that $100,000, the irrational animal brain feels the loss of money that's not there. And when it feels that loss of money, it explodes. It starts getting nervous. It starts getting way more instinctual on what is fair and what is right, and is someone trying to take advantage of me, or I'm going to fight, or I'm going to do something, or I'm going to lash out, which is probably what I see happens more, what would happen more in real estate, especially in homes, because of that loss aversion. The same thing happens to somebody that goes into a house and say it's a $100,000 value house, it's selling for $110,000, and they're thinking they're going to negotiate to $98,000 so they get a little bit better deal, you know, so they can feel good about it. But all of a sudden they find out there's reasons they can only get it for $90,000. They're going to have that loss aversion on that $8,000 to $10,000 like it's coming out of their pocket. totally irrational about this. See, we see this all the time when we deal with antis. It's totally irrational. I can tell you from knowing vegans, totally irrational. Because if you explain to somebody that a pure vegetable farm causes way more death than any trapper ever could in his lifetime, the logical part of their brain, that should click. The emotional part, which is a lot of times has no IQ, according to Dr. Loria, which I kind of agree with her. Since your feelings have no IQ, you can't let the logical part of your brain kick over, because the irrational part is seeing something. You know, seeing an animal getting shot or trapped or something like that. The tens of thousands of life forms that you're killing out of that vegetable farm, you just can't see that per se. So it's completely irrational. Everybody we meet every day is irrational. You're irrational, I'm irrational, everybody's irrational. If you want to have a more calm life, it gets easier once you understand that you're dealing with irrational beings. That's why the right sucks so much in their talking points. They're always logical. The left is never logical. They're emotional. Animal rights are never logical. They're emotional. You know, when you hear someone say they're not paying their fair share, for one, this the word fair in there shows you that it's an accusation that they're taking advantage of somebody. When you ask them what that fair share is, that's a logical question. I've never heard a liberal say what that number is on taxes. Not once. Because they're not in it for the logic. They're in it for the emotion of it. It's a talking point. If they got all the money from all the rich people, it still wouldn't be the fair share. They should be able to go sell their house and pimp out their wives or whatever, because where they're at with their money before they started getting screwed with is because it wasn't being fair and they deserve whatever they get. It's totally irrational. So what do you do with this? Well, once you kind of understand it, you can deal with it a little bit better. And you can start thinking about things when you're dealing with people on a day-to-day basis. Their idea of fairness is not going to be the same as yours. Loss aversion is a huge issue with everybody. I see it all the time at trapping conventions. Loss aversion, to me, I see it every single trapping convention, sometimes hundreds of times in a show. Now, somebody wants to go out and catch bobcats. They buy, say, like the Cat Collector DVD. They see that. They see all the cats. They see the set. They see the lure and everything like that. But they have a $20 bill in their pocket. And with lure prices going up, it's $22. Let's say $20 bill if you're just buying it a month ago. $20. A lot of people cannot get past the unknown of being able to use Cat Collector, even though it's probably the most proven cat lure in the country, used from Canada to Florida, South America, and Europe, and actually Australia and Africa. It's got a tremendous track record. It'll stay active for 30 days in a desert. Most lures are gone in 3 days. Very unusual in that aspect. It doesn't matter if it gets wet. It gets better when it gets wet. It doesn't matter if it gets rained on. But the loss aversion part of taking that is the ability to gain as many cats as I could catch with this lure. I don't know if I can do that because I'm going to lose this $20. So I see that all the time. And I understand it. Sometimes people just can't afford it. They've been, as Travis says, bamboozled before with a bunch of crap in a bottle and it didn't really work. Maybe they don't have the skill level to really get the use out of the lure that they want. I mean, there's all kind of reasons. But when we're dealing with people, they're irrational animals. And that's not something to look down on people for. That's just what people are. And once you really grasp that, then you can get to issues where using different ways of negotiating, whether it's going out to dinner, or you're going to go on vacation, or you're going to buy a business. Then you can use things in your life, if you're willing to be open-minded enough to actually self-educate yourself on how irrational people are, that you can go out and learn, so you can learn to talk to people to get them past the irrational point where they can make a better decision one way or the other. See, good marketing is not to trick people. That's crappy marketing. Good marketing is to get people to get the best product that they can get to fix an issue, whatever that issue is, whether they've been catching a bobcat, fixing plumbing. But you have to be able to talk to people when you see this irrationality and this lashing out coming because it's instinctual, or they're feeling like they're losing control in a conversation, that you can de-escalate that. So now you can be two people again that can work on the issue. What happens most, if you want to know what non-negotiating looks like, watch reality TV where you see families screaming and hollering and cussing and shooting each other birds and trying to say the most hurtful things they can to each other and everything else. That is the non-rational human being in its fullest form on TV. And see, we all have a choice. We can live our life like those people where you look at them because they seem, you know, crazier than we are, so they're entertaining. Or you can live a life where it can be extremely more productive and you can go about your life and do things in such a better way. It's totally up to you. You know, this has just become more and more involved with me as I started reading these books. And then we got in this negotiation on the house, and it's not going bad. It's just, it frustrates me because I have no perspective. I don't know what they're thinking. They don't know what I'm thinking. So I don't even know how this is considered negotiation. I don't want to beat them up. I don't want to intimidate them. I don't want to win anything. I just want where there is a fairness on both sides. Because we're going to be neighbors, probably, if they buy the house. But I've also seen from watching the book, a lot of the other psychological things of the irrational being is just something that if you learn how to phrase some things, say some things, not get frustrated with somebody when you see this irrational part come out, all of a sudden your life gets a little bit better. And isn't that the goal? Really? Have a little bit better life no matter what you're doing. And there's no excuse not to, because you can get a Kindle for cheap, and you can get books on it for even cheaper. So educating yourself is getting cheaper and cheaper. So what are you going to do with that? Ignore it or have a better life? Totally up to you.